Hey everybody, thank you for downloading episode 139 of We Got This with Mark and Hal. This episode was recorded live in New York City, but guess what? We're going to be live in just a couple weeks, Sunday, November 5th, 7 p.m. at the Moroccan in Los Angeles. We're going to have special guest Janet Varney, and we're sharing a double bill with our good friends over at Can I Pet Your Dog? This is the first time we've ever done a show in L.A. We're super excited, and we want you to be there. So go get tickets. You can go to hallublin.com/live. And you'll find a link there to buy them. They're $15 in advance, or you can get them at the door, but they're $20 then. So if you're a deal hunter, get it right now. But first, please enjoy episode 139 of We Got This with Mark and Hal.
Hello, I'm Hal Lublin.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
Since the dawn of humanity, one issue has gone unsettled. With the fate of the world in the balance, we're here to settle once and for all.
Best classic Muppet movie.
That's right. Don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Podcasts should have a theme song.
Podcasts should not have a theme song.
Yes, they should.
No, they shouldn't.
They sound good.
Yeah, but people are just going to skip past it.
You know what?
You're right. We got this.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Craig. Oh, I'm ruining everything.
Show's over. That's it.
Show's over. Thank you all for coming to the show. We are so, so excited about this. How many of you guys have heard our show before? All right. Thank you.
A smattering.
How many of you are Muppets fans? Yeah.
Way better.
I kind of was hoping that when we would look out this way at the house that it would look like the view from the Muppet Show stage, where it's just a lot of like feathers and fur kind of bouncing and flopping around. But you guys are all very attractive.
Not that the Muppets aren't attractive.
So today we are discussing what is the best of the original Muppet movies.
Yes.
The original three Muppet movies, and that is The Muppet Movie.
Yep.
The Great Muppet Caper.
Correct.
And The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Got them all.
But there are four chairs up here, as we cannot do this alone. We have brought with us some special guests. Hal. Would you like to introduce the first of our special guests?
Sure. The first of our special guests has been on the show twice before. He is one of the creative forces behind the Venture Brothers, our good buddy, Doc Hammer.
Doc Hammer!
Thank you. Hello.
Welcome.
Mark and Hal.
Thanks, Doc. Our other special guest knows a thing or two about this because she has for a long time been a Muppet performer. Over a dozen years on Sesame Street. She's also a Tony-nominated actor and a friend of ours, and we are very excited to hear her insights into this. Stephanie D'Abruzzo is here. Yeah,
standing
please.
For a lady. What lady?
I would have stood for you no matter what sex you were.
Aw,
damn.
I just want to say that.
You're very inclusive.
It's nice to be treated like a human being on the planet, right?
Yeah.
Are you usually usually treated like a puppet on the planet?
No, I'm just saying I think in 2017 we need to treat our fellow earthlings like fellow earthlings.
Amen.
There we go.
Treat everybody the way that the Muppets treat each other.
That's right.
They hit each other all the time, but they love each other at the end of the day.
That's right.
That is. Yeah. It's in the Muppets writing Bible,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So before we go into this, into really launching into talking about these three movies in particular, let's just talk about our relationships to the Muppets themselves. I mean, as a thing. I grew up on the Muppets.
Yeah. I dated Lou Zealand for 10 years. That's my relationship to the Muppets.
Aww.
Did not end well.
You broke his heart.
One day I just opened my front door and there was a fish and written on it said, "It's over." And that was the end of my relationship. No, I
and then
I
the
also,
fish boomeranged back
gonna,
to him.
I was going to say, I'm surprised it stayed there.
Yeah. When I went to grab it, it flew back. No, the first time I was ever on television, I was 5 years old. I went on the stage at the Comedy Works in Philadelphia to do a bit in something called Double Muppets Hold the Onions. So NBC at the time was showing two episodes of The Muppet Show back to back. And in between, they would go live to the Comedy Works in Philadelphia. This is just the local.
Now, did your parents put you into this, or you were a kid that's like, I gotta get myself on stage?
They put me into it, and my mother was like, here's the joke you're gonna tell, which was a very long and convoluted, terrible. I was like, just let me tell a quick, like a two-line joke. That's all we need. But she had me tell like a Spalding Gray monologue of a joke, and, you can see in the video, which if I can, I'll find it and I'll post a link to it. You can see it.
You don't
want
to just tell us the joke now?
No, I'm not going to tell the joke. Okay. We have a limited amount of time here today. But I'm wearing a shirt and tie and jacket, and my mother is in the audience holding up the sweatshirt I get to wear when I'm done. So as soon as I'm finished, I hide behind the host, Bob Nelson, noted comedian Bob Nelson. I start taking off the shirt and tie and then run off of the stage. Aww. I could not stand to be
so. A sweater was a carrot for you. Like, we will take you out of the monkey suit. You don't have to wear that suit.
Yes.
If you just tell this long, convoluted joke.
That was it.
She literally dangled it on a fishing pole.
Yeah.
In front of Bob Nelson.
To get me to take it. So that, yes. I've been working with the Muppets for years, is the point of that story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up a huge fan of the Muppets, and the Muppet movies came out when I was a kid. So I went and saw them all in the theater, and they had a big impact on my childhood that's carried on to this day because I've never matured.
There you go.
Doc?
I just love the Muppets. I think somebody who doesn't love the Muppets might be evil. I haven't done the chart of like what dictates true evil. You know, sociopathy, all these kind of things. Do you not like the Muppets? What's wrong with you? Like, are you a do you hoard guns and not like the Muppets, or do you just not like the Muppets? Do you kick your dog and not like the Muppets, or do you just not like the Muppets? So I just love the Muppets. And I think when I was a kid, there weren't as many options for brilliance. You had terrible, like He-Man, and then the Muppets.
Yeah.
So it was a clear choice that the Muppets were these living, breathing things. And I also got to find out about all the stuff my dad liked by watching the Muppets. Because I didn't know who any of these people – Orson Welles to me as a kid, I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all these people, he's like, oh, that's so-and-so, so-and-so. I don't know if you know so-and-so, so-and-so.
A big fan of so-and-so.
Yeah, yeah, so-and-so, so-and-so.
He was in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie you saw. So that it was another thing where I got to watch something with my dad that wasn't Star Trek and we could bond.
Right.
And then he would let me wear the sweater.
As long as you made it through the movie?
Yeah, no, if I made it through.
It was weird that he made you wear a full suit to watch films. In my day, when we went to the cinema, we dressed up.
Yeah.
Nowadays, everybody goes
in
shorts.
The whole suit was one object. It was like a zipper in the back, and I would just get into it. Can't change the tie. Can't change the vest. Put on the suit.
What about you, Stephanie? You seem to have the closest relationship with the Muppets of any of us on
stage. But it was the same as you guys. I mean, I grew up with the Muppets. I was born in, I'm sorry, I'm going to give my age, but I don't care. I was born in 1971, so like the golden era of Sesame Street was starting. I wanted to go to Sesame Street on vacation, even though we were too poor to take vacations. It was sad for many reasons. But I knew on some level, even when I was three, that I couldn't meet Bugs Bunny, but I could meet Big Bird. Like, and I knew that thing in the Bugs Bunny suit was not the real Bugs Bunny, but I knew that Big Bird was real.
Yeah.
So I was a big fan of the Muppet Show. I remember going to see the Muppet movie, like, you know, friends' birthday parties and things like that. And then it wasn't cool anymore to like the Muppets when you hit, this was, you know.
What?
Well, okay. It was a different time. It was before the internet.
Oh, right.
And you didn't have, you know, other people in the world that you could connect to and say, I like this. I secretly like this too. So when you're in middle school and high school, you're kind of like, I guess I like them. No, that's for kids. But then I started babysitting again. Well, okay. So I remember turn on Sesame Street. I'm a junior in high school and we had a large window, in our living room. And it was the first time I'm watching Bert and Ernie dance myself to sleep, right? You all know that great song where the sheep are taking Bert out of the bedroom and I'm laughing at it. My mom comes in and I'm like turning off the television.
Somebody's in here.
Someone's in. Yeah, that's exactly right. It was the saddest juvenile tale ever that I went and I was afraid that someone, a neighbor was going to look in the window and see a junior in high school watching Sesame Street.
There's something cool about the idea of watching the Muppets be an act of rebellion.
Yeah.
Like that was your rebellion because they're anarchists.
It kind of was. Then now I go to, you know, I'm in college and we all revert to the comfort foods of our youth and we're watching Warner Brothers cartoons with different eyes and I was watching the Muppets and Sesame Street with different eyes, the eyes of a performer. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, that guy doing that voice is doing that character too. And that guy's doing that one. I want to do that. And so I taught myself how to be a puppeteer. And that's, and long story short, I became a Muppet performer. And I've been on Sesame Street since 1993. Those people didn't like my story. They're leaving.
So, no, the story's good.
Like, oh, this
thank
is
you.
The
I appreciate that. No. But I'm glad
you got over your cool fear. Because let me tell you.
Oh, I didn't care about it. Once you're.
Yeah, when you become a puppeteer, you are like, you're up there with magician and uncool.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Muppeteer is like the same level of awe as Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, it's just not cool.
I like to say we're like a step above mime.
You're cool.
On the ladder. Like a step above mime. Above mime and birthday party clown. I'm telling you, in the respect, you tell someone you're a puppeteer, I mean, you, that's the punchline.
Right. Yeah. They're like, how do you get paid, though?
Yeah.
Are you also an accountant?
Oh, I have relatives who still ask me.
Wow. How's it going? How's it going with the puppet?
So do you have a real job?
You watched Sesame Street,
well,
right?
No, I mean, now is different. But when I was starting out in those first few years, it's like, so what are you really going to do? Because it's not something that for me, it was a different way of performing. It was a way. And for me, especially, it was a way to perform all the characters I wanted to play without it mattering what I looked like. Mm-hmm. Without it mattering how much I weighed or how tall I was or what gender I was or what species I was. I have played teapots and sheep and tomatoes and letters and numbers and everything in between and penguins and so many cows and so many chickens. I have played so many chickens. And it's really freeing as a performer to not have any limitations. No one is looking at your headshot and saying, yeah, she can't play that pig.
Do you have a favorite character that you've played on Sesame Street?
Well, I just started playing Prairie Dawn. Fran Brill, the great
legendary
Fran Brill.
Legendary Prairie Dawn.
Yes. Yeah. Fran Brill, whose puppeteering shoes are upstairs in the exhibit, if you haven't gone up there, as well as
those
Prairie.
I saw those in massive platforms.
Yeah, because Fran's short like I am, and when we work standing up, we need something to equalize
our
height.
I just want to wear them. I think they're cool.
They are very cool. They're rocking. So I started doing Prairie recently, but there was a character that appeared on an episode of Elmo's World in the late 90s. And, you know, Elmo would talk to, if he was thinking about shoes today, he would talk to a shoe. If he was thinking about plants, he would talk to a plant. And he was thinking about jackets. And there was this little pink jacket and with a little hood, with a little fur-trimmed hood, and the eyes were on the hood. And the sleeves went, and the zipper went up and down, and you'd move the head, the hood up and down to make the mouth move. And the little jacket talked like this. I said, you want to talk to a jacket? I got sleeves and I keep a couple pockets to keep tissues in. And it was such an adorable jacket. And the writers liked it so much that they wrote it in, because like, what are you going to do with a jacket on Sesame Street? Well, they wrote a script where Zoe, poor Zoe, no one wanted to play with Zoe. So she wished her jacket could come to life and play with her.
Oh.
So she called upon the jacket fairy. I'm not kidding you.
What else would you do?
No one was high when they wrote this script.
Right.
This is what we do on the show.
Why didn't she call the friend fairy?
She called the jacket fairy because the friend fairy couldn't turn her jacket into a friend. The friend fairy could probably only just get her some random friend.
Why didn't she just hang out with the jacket fairy?
Because he was busy. He had to deal with a little quilted number in Poughkeepsie.
Sure, I tell you.
That was very... I'm paraphrasing, actually, to be perfect. I'm not that funny. So I really loved... And they did that twice with Zoe and her jacket.
Amazing.
And it was... I love things like that, because where else am I going to be able to talk about this role except here?
Yeah.
So thank you for asking. And where else are people going to understand it but in an audience like this?
This crowd gets it. They're like, yeah, an anthropomorphic jacket. Awesome.
We do that all the time.
Yeah. What can you talk for those of us who have never been puppeteers on Sesame Street or any Muppet venture? Talk about the process. Like, what does it look like? If I was standing in the room watching you guys shoot a scene, what would it look like?
Well, we do things two ways. Sometimes on Sesame Street, when we're on the street, we're literally sitting on the ground or the floor on these little rolling scooters. Remember those scooters in gym class used to roll around on? We have some form of that so we can move around. But we are literally rolling on the ground. Our arms are over our heads. If we are on a swing set or a raised set, we'll work standing up, thus the big shoes.
And they look cool.
And they look cool.
Yeah.
With our arms stretched over our heads, and we are looking at television monitors. The great thing about being a Muppet performer, it is the only way that an actor can actually see his or her own performance live as it's happening the way the audience is seeing it.
Do you ever work at like in a some elaborate network of trusses and buttresses and stuff too?
I haven't done anything like that, but there's...
Because how long can you keep your hand up like that? Well, I remember a class of me like, I gotta hold it up with my arm. It's so hard.
Well, the you know, it's harder. You know what it's harder to do is just stay stock still. If you're moving around and dancing, you're getting actually some blood moving.
So do you ever like strap it to your head with belts?
No, because you have to be able to come down. You have to be able to look like one of the rookie mistakes is people just put on a puppet and they stand there and they don't actually make the puppet. The key to being a good puppet performer is knowing how to make a puppet breathe when it has no lungs. Make a puppet see even though its eyes don't work. Make a puppet, you actually believe that that puppet has vocal cords even though they are your vocal cords. So you have to stay constantly in a little bit of movement, in a little bit of motion. Jim Henson called it playing a game with the audience, and you guys referred to it on the last podcast, a magic trick. And it's true. It kind of is, because we're creating an illusion. Puppets that don't have feet, the way we move to make them look like they have legs that are hitting the ground, and sometimes we add sound effects to that. The way we'll do a double take to make it seem like that puppet is, you know, has eyes that move. There are people who swear that Miss Piggy used to bat her eyelashes at Kermit, but her eyelids never had a mechanism to them.
I am one of those people, and you just blew my mind.
Because it's an angles game. The reason why we look at
an angles game.
We look at a monitor so we can see the camera. Mm-hmm. And then what we're able to do, we can look straight into the camera by, you know, and it's hard because when we move to our right, it's camera left.
I was just going to ask.
It's not a mirror.
Like performing puppetry in front of a mirror.
No.
Yeah.
So you have to years to learn to have that be second nature. So then if you look at that lens directly and you're staring right into it, then you look like a millimeter up from that. Suddenly that puppet seems thoughtful. And you look a little bit down and suddenly that puppet seems pensive or depressed. And it's the angles of Miss Piggy sort of tilting her head at Kermit or doing this little like sweeping thing or doing those things that she'd do with her body. Those things make up for the fact that her eyelashes don't move.
I don't believe
we
you.
Do these broad moments. We do these broad movements to make up
fake,
for those things.
I don't know which movie it was. It might have been the second one. We'll get to that. But they put on like just surprised freak show karate eyes on her.
Oh,
once.
That was the first one. Yeah. That was Muppet movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
I know. I was freaked out by it when
scary.
I
scary. I'm like, that's not the Muppet I know.
Oh, I got freaked out in Great Muppet Caper when they did was take a photo.
Oh,
of
right,
them, and it blinds everyone, and so all their eyes are just white with tiny dots. Yeah. And it was like, oh, that's not what they look like.
Yeah. You know what? And when Gonzo said he was resuscitating Camilla.
Yeah.
And he said that they're now engaged, and his eyes went.
Yeah, now Gonzo has a little mechanism. So his
he's got a little mechanism, all right. Gonzo.
Gonzo's eyelids have a tiny mechanism. Some puppets do have a mechanism
like
of some
Piggy.
Kind. No, Miss Piggy does not have a mechanism.
I don't believe you.
But she does blink, right?
She does blink.
She blinks,
Kermit
right?
Kermit doesn't have a mechanism.
Does Miss Piggy blink?
Miss Piggy does not blink.
I hear she blinks.
Frank Oz does blink.
Okay.
He's got many mechanisms.
Okay. But he's a man of many mechanisms.
Frank Oz has these little scanners in it, so when one eye blinks, the other eye blinks automatically.
Right. But suffice it to say, when we're working with our arm over our head, we have to make sure that our heads aren't in the shot, so sometimes we're ducking down like this. And our hand, I like to say dominant hand. Usually it's a right hand, but there are some left-handed puppeteers who puppeteer with their left hand. So Jennifer Barnhart likes to say dominant hand. So your dominant hand is in the puppet's mouth.
Well, the left hand is sinister. You know that.
Well, that's a podcast for another time.
She should have had that removed in grade school.
and then use
the correct hand.
That's right.
Or
well,
the right hand.
Well, it's interesting because it's one of the reasons why many Muppets are left-handed.
They also play guitar left-handed.
They play guitar, and that's why. Because a puppeteer's left hand is working that arm rod.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as thrilled as I was when Kermit would actually go to a higher chord, his hand went up. I was pretty thrilled with that.
Yeah.
But they all played left-handed.
Yeah, because if your right hand's doing the mouth work, your left hand is manipulating either the arm rod or, in the case of Cookie Monster or Fozzie Bear or in what we call a live hand puppet, they are physically in like a glove where you can then pick up something.
And they're right-handed.
And then
do you play a masseuse afterwards with people just doing this all day and stuff?
Stretching is important. Stretching is really important.
Yeah.
Because it's not just your, people say, oh, your hand must get tired. It's your forearm. It's your shoulder. It's your neck. It's a, there have been puppeteers who
What about these babies right here? What about the old thighs?
Well, if you're.
Get down to a horse stance.
Saying if you're rolling around on the ground.
You're on your knees. And
we try not to do knees. Try not to do that. But we're like scooting ourselves across the floor. Yeah, your legs get tired.
I like that we try not to do knees. Like it's all these things have been worked out years before. Yeah. No, people have ruined themselves doing this.
Well, because
so we don't go down on our knees
anymore.
You're
young, so you don't know.
Oh, that's what I like to look like.
I'm just saying I am old enough to know have said take care of your knees. If you do nothing else in your life, take care of your knees.
Oh, no, that's why I'm on the elliptical and not running.
The rest of your life is
hell, right?
Yeah. I'm always at it. I was born on an elliptical, and I will die on an elliptical.
I'm not going to go run. I got to keep these beauties going.
Low impact is key.
No, knees and back. Don't ruin them now, kids.
There have been times where, you're
tempted to. Also, the sun.
Yeah.
I know this is off topic, but stay out of the sun.
Absolutely.
Sure. It's bad for your skin.
It's bad for your skin.
I have eight parasols. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Use them all at once, like a big parasol bouquet that you carry around.
Yeah. Are you like the penguin where you have some that hypnotize people and some that shoot like smoke?
No, mine are really boring. Some you can use in the rain.
Well, I'll
and
tell
some
you
are just pretty.
Since we started talking about the films a little while ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Here's what we're going to do.
Thanks, Hal.
I try to jump in. I'm doing my best. I like to think of myself as the Kermit of this panel.
Wow.
Trying to keep it together.
Impressive.
But also hopelessly going to fail, which I love. We're discussing, as we said, the first three Muppet films. I know that there are people who, when they heard it, was like, it's clearly Muppets from Space. Somebody actually said that. And other people are like, Muppet Treasure Island, what about Muppet Christmas Carol? We're only doing the three for which Jim Henson was alive and working as a puppeteer. Stephanie, who is here on this panel, has put together short trailers for each of the films.
To refresh your memory.
Yeah, we're going to go through them one at a time. We're going to talk a little bit about them. And once we've seen all three and talked about them, then we will decide once and for all which is the greatest of those three films. I'm sure everybody here has a strong opinion about it.
Mm-hmm. I see him way more Scooter than I am Kermit.
Me?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking, I mean, physically it's more of that Rolf dog thing going on. Yeah.
Right?
It's the animation and the way you move.
It's the animation.
Yeah.
I'm saying in spirit.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Rolf.
In spirit, I'm seeing a little bit of Scooter in there.
I'll take it.
Kermit, hey, let's put on a show, and then Scooter is... How are we going to put that show on?
Yeah, that's true.
15 seconds, Mr. Hammer.
Yeah, I like to think of myself as a duality of a man.
Yeah,
you're Hal, you're going to keep us going?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I'm supposed to. I'm the derailer of these tracks.
Let's watch the first of these clips from 1979. It's the original Muppet movie.
The Muppet movie, huh? Let's see. Exterior Swamp Day.
You've got talent, kid. You can make millions of people happy.
Millions of people happy.
Kermit the Frog! Simple of Doc Hopper's French Fried Frog Legs!
There's $500 in it for you. You could be earning this much every year.
Don't you want to be rich and famous?
Not working for you, I don't.
The frog is right. You're asking him to do something terrible. I can't be a part of it.
I'll double your percentage.
This is a narrative of very heavy-duty proportions.
It's that movie.
He's got to keep his little froggy self away from this hopper dude.
Too true. Too true.
He touched me.
Ugh, go watch. You'll get what?
No, you see, that's just a myth.
That's a myth.
Yes.
I have a dream, too. I want to go to Bombay, India and become a movie star.
You picked up a weirdo.
Rolf the dog. Pleased to meet you.
We am, is, are, and be.
Waka, 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 waka.
The Electric Mayhem.
Miss Piggy.
Where is that kind? Whisper sweet nothings into my ears.
Motorcycle cop.
Motorcycle cop is a sweet nothing?
Can you picture that?
Someday we'll find it. The rainbow connection. The lover. The dreamer.
I've got a dream too, but it's about singing and dancing and making people happy.
Prepare the standard rich and famous contract book.
Kermit the Frog and Company.
I've seen detergents that leave a better film than this.
Oh! The film is okie dokie.
Oh, man. That's the movie that made me want to be an actor.
Yeah?
Yeah. From when I was little, like that was
really?
Absolutely.
What you wanted to do a cameo with puppets. I was one of like,
no, it was.
Look at that Milton go just at the end, at the end of his career, just coming on and winking to me.
Man,
I want to do that.
I didn't fancy myself a Milton Berle.
An Imogen Coco, maybe. Mayhaps.
No, was it the rags to riches Hollywood story?
It was the, yeah. It was the end of the movie.
Yeah.
It's the, we go to Hollywood.
Ah.
I was talking to Hodgman about this the other day, and he brought up a point that I loved, which was, yeah, it's a whole movie where the finale of the movie is them getting some cardboard and paint and remaking for you at the end of the movie, the movie you just watched.
Yes.
Yes.
And then the whole life is a movie, write your own ending, keep believing, keep pretending. Like this, that sort of was one of those like, yeah.
And not selling
I'm
out.
I'm going to do this.
And not,
Hollywood.
And not selling out.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
the man.
Yeah.
Not doing commercials.
Well, look,
even though they're very lucrative.
We all gotta work, right?
Y'all gotta pay the rent.
Yeah. I'll take a job that's $500 a year.
I was gonna say.
I would love
$500 a year.
I could be making that much.
I'll pay you $500. Also, what a villain in this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, this is the man who won an Oscar for what, a 10-minute role in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas?
And oh,
this,
did he really?
Yeah.
Charles Durning?
What? Nominated. He didn't win.
Nominated.
But still, nominated for a 10-minute role. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a man who, he appears on a screen.
Yeah.
And you want to know what's up with him.
Yeah, but for me as a kid, after the movie was over, I just replaced him with Boss Hogg.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It just flipped. It's like the dyslexia.
Oh, sure.
I've written words with sixes in them as Bs.
You mean like Tom
So I'm
Bobby
ready
and...
to flip any person into another person. So I'm like, boy, that what a great episode of the Duke Boys I just saw.
I thought you were going to say
that was amazing. I like how Kermit was on the television show with the Duke. I couldn't. That was amazing.
In a Studebaker.
Because it had that kind of like, oh, I'm wearing all white and This isn't my favorite Muppet movie. Is it okay if I start taking sides already? Because
you can take you certainly can take sides.
Because I'd love to. I'd love to take a side right now.
What do you like about this movie, Doc?
It has one of the best jokes in the history of the moving image.
What?
Ooh. Oh my!
A mind blowing joke that every time I say it, little hairs stand up on the back of my neck. Like it's that good of a joke. It's like the perfect song, which is Bear Left. Right Frog.
It is a four-word joke that is
amazing. Oh my. When that happened, I'm like, what? Who's the egg? Who's the chicken? When did they craft that? And how did they wait all that time to deliver it in this movie? I would have blown that so early. Just like,
burn that in 77.
Oh, yeah, like a Bayer aspirin ad. Here it is, boom. I can't keep it in. It's that good.
But they saved a lot of things for this film. This is the first time you really got to see the Muppets out in the open.
It was?
So,
yeah.
So technically this is an achievement. Obviously you were going, how did they do that
when Kermit was on the bike?
Yeah,
I stood up and knocked over a chair screaming no when I first said, no, no, no. Like it's holding on because gravity now was up for grabs. It was a myth. How does everything work?
Stephanie, how did they do it?
Well, I want to talk about that.
It was the
outdoor thing. You know, that was the first time the Muppets were shot outdoors. In fact, they had to do a whole set of 16mm camera tests with the director, James Frawley. And some of those are actually upstairs in the exhibit. You can see them. They did not know.
Just
if
because
that would
of
work.
The lighting in the studio.
Yeah, they didn't know
they
if the Muppets would look like they belonged in the world if they were outside of a fake set.
Okay,
so how do you ride a bike? I'm not going to tell you. First of all, you might be interested in knowing that's not the first time Kermit ever rode a bike.
It's the first time I saw it.
Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas was the first time Kermit rode a bike.
Oh, barbecue. Bless my spirits.
Yeah.
That's my riddle. Oh,
he
I
introduces
love that one.
The movie. He's riding a bike. He runs into a lamppost. He flips over on his bike.
That's
so
right.
He wipes out in both of these situations.
Oh, my riding bikes. Goodness. How was it done?
So basically, it's the one time where Kermit is essentially a marionette. Kermit is a remote-controlled Kermit on the bicycle. His feet are attached to the pedals.
Right.
Kermit is... So one of the illusions that we have, for example, if Emmett Otter is rowing the boat, Emmett can't row the boat, but if you attach his hands to the oars and have a mechanism to make the oars go, it will look like the boat is essentially puppeteering Emmett. So in this case, as long as the bike is moving and the wheels are moving, which makes the pedals move, which makes the feet of Kermit that are attached to the pedals move.
Did they just throw a Kermit and go?
Like I said, it's essentially the bike was a giant marionette. As was Kermit. So it was worked overhead, and if you look very closely, you can see fine monofilament.
When they did, do you remember the episode, I think it might have been the second movie, Caper, where everybody was riding
the
bike? What was above that?
And they weave in and out of one another.
Yes, and those were two cranes, but Jim Henson even said himself, once we figured out how to get one Muppet to ride a bike, it was actually easier to get a bunch of Muppets to ride a bike because, and it's, again, it's just the genius being able to disguise a rod between the wheels that connects one bike to another bike. So if you'll notice, they're scattered
when you
in
see
their
like
formation.
A vaudeville show and it's like a bunch of mannequins, but they've all got the cane.
And if you look really closely at Muppet Caper, the front wheel is of one bike is attached to the back wheel of another bike is attached. So it's like almost like a daisy chain of bicycles, which then was not only some of it run from overhead, it was being towed by a giant tricycle way in the foreground that you can't really see because there are a lot of other kids and stuff riding their bicycles
was
alongside
there a huge,
of it.
Like Muppet guy
no,
on the
Brian
tricycle?
No, Brian Henson was one of the people driving one of the tricycles.
Did he have that? Was he dressed like Sweepy or whatever? That did,
no, he just, no, Sweetums?
Sweetums, yeah. It was just whatever.
Sweepy was Popeye.
Oh, Popeye Baby.
Popeye Baby with no legs.
Let's talk about some Speaking more no great likes. Things that we love about this original Muppet movie.
The music?
The music,
Paul Williams.
Paul Williams' music in the original Muppet movie.
Yeah.
We
did a – there's been at 54 Below in New York City, there have been a couple of evenings that have been put together of Muppet music played, sung by various
– Max Crumb did that.
That's right. And I did – I've done a few of those nights. And essentially, the one thing that's we're basically doing the entire Muppet movie soundtrack because every song from the Muppet movie is sung. Like, not everything from all the movies or Sesame Street are represented.
What are the big hits in that? Rainbow Connection, clearly.
Yes.
Right.
Monster hit.
Moving Right Along.
Moving Right Along.
Oh, right.
Can You Picture That is the introduction.
I do not like that song.
I love
it. Oh, it's a
really?
Great song.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime the Dr. Teeth band played, first of all, I don't like music in films. I'm that guy.
Or just in general?
Or kissing.
What? What?
I'm like an 8-year-old. Yeah, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. I would say that, like, musicals, I turn them down. I'm like, stop with this singing. It's barely moving the narrative forward, and it's like everybody knows the lyrics suddenly.
Do you know what I do for
a band?
Living?
Yeah. It just doesn't matter. I live in between those breaths. I'm hoping it stops happening quickly.
This is
Doc Hammer lives in between your breaths and all of your nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah. Please, no, I am the thing that lives between the breath of song and kissing and that little area of like I just want Neil Simon all the time. So I want
you
Muppets,
want Plaza Suite,
Muppet sitting. I want Muppet sitting. I'm not offending you, am I, by saying that I don't like musicals?
You are entitled to your opinion. I just feel like maybe I should leave if I am.
I just don't like singing in movies. I don't.
Well, strap in because we got.
But yet,
two
are you ready for this? I love so many musicals, and I don't know why. Is it the challenge?
Do you?
Well, maybe you like good musicals. Maybe you just don't like bad musicals, because there are a lot of them.
There's not many musicals that I want to hear the music from, with the exception of, are you ready for this? Jesus Christ Superstar.
Okay.
That's
I love that 39 Lashes. That's cool. But everything else is like they're such moments of their time, and a lot of them don't transcend that moment. And that's why the Dr. Teeth stuff, it's so of its moment. It's that there's a guitar solo going through the whole thing. And it's too locked in its moment.
So you don't like those that are dated?
But like Rainbow Connection, I can handle. It's fine.
So I'm guessing that then you just don't like things that are dated.
I don't like things that are dated.
You like things that are timeless.
Yes, because when things are dated, there's something a little too wrong with them. Things that are timeless, like a frog playing banjo on a log.
I get that.
That's forever.
Okay.
You know, since that frog came out of the primordial ooze, picked up a banjo and played Rainbow Connection, that has been going on since the dawn of frogs who can play banjos.
You know,
the kids are leaving.
I so badly want to dig deep on you not liking kissing in movies, but at some point it will be Tuesday.
Happened when I was like 7, and I can't get rid of it.
Let me finish answering your question. I hope that something better comes along.
Yes. Yeah.
And never before, never again.
Never before, never again. I'm going to go back there someday.
Uh-huh. Great.
I saw a comedy show that the only earnest moment in the entire comedy show was when she sat down and sang, I'm going to go back there someday. Yeah. And it was beautiful.
I love Emmett Otter's jug band Christmas music. I remember that.
That's also Paul Williams.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't like Paul Williams. He's lovely. Despite his hairline and height, he's a lovely man. I don't know him personally.
He really is a wonderful
person. He seems to be a lovely man.
Yes. Well, he's here right now, Mr. Paul Williams. Face your accuser.
Was he in that weird movie with the Falcon?
Phantom of the Paradise?
Yeah.
We have got to talk about Muppet movies at some point, you guys.
This is tangentially a Paul Williams affair.
No, but Paul Williams has written more music for Muppets than any other composer outside of the Sesame Street gang. Because he wrote Emmett Otter, he wrote Muppet Movie, he did Muppets, going beyond Muppets Christmas Carol and Muppets Letters to Santa, and he was in an episode of the Muppet Show.
Would anybody agree that the amount of stars that show up and do a little bit inside a Muppet movie has any bearing on the quality of that Muppet movie?
No, I think it's something to consider, the quality of the cameos and maybe the number. They certainly listen, when you're making a movie.
Steve Martin is mind blowing.
He's great.
Yeah. Mind blowing.
I think when you're making a movie not knowing whether or not it's ultimately going to be received well, this is, for all intents and purposes, my understanding is that a lot of this was an experiment. We don't know if this will work or not.
We believe
it will. Yeah. So let's throw every single person we can get to appear in this film, every favor we can ask, everybody we know, and see if they'll come be in it. So it really is the kitchen sink of the Muppets from the amount of meta in it, which I think degrades over films, over the series of the films, to the quality of the cameos. I mean, it's
over the series of films. Do you mean past the original three?
Just from these three.
Because when Gonzo, I think it's the second one, is going, how long do these credits last?
Right.
That's still amazing. It's still funny. Yeah. It's still somebody calling out the fact that this is a fourth wall experience.
I mean, within the story, to have Miss Piggy take a call from her agent.
Yeah.
And find out it's a commercial. Take it. And then just
leave.
Excuse me. And then just takes off.
Bye.
That
still works.
Such a brilliant bit that I'd forgotten watching it. By the way, another thing we can measure in these films is how many times I cried watching it. Mm. I cried 3 times watching this film, including
in the first one,
the opening sequence. Yes.
When was the last time you'd seen it before this refresher?
It had been a few years.
Yeah.
I'm going to say at least 5 years
since
I had just sat and watched it.
Yeah.
And I was on the plane to New York watching. I watched all three of them, 1, 2, 3.
Wow.
So I've seen all three of them. I watched them all on Thursday.
Wow.
And I was sitting in a full row. Just every once in a while, with
tears in your eyes,
going.
I always find it really moving to see these films at a place like this. We screened these movies here. My husband, Craig Shemin, president of the Jim Henson Legacy.
Craig Shemin, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And actually, it's amazing to watch a film that you've seen a bunch of times with people who've never seen it before.
Right.
And you're hearing that response for the first time, and you're reminded again of like, oh, yes. It is funny.
Yeah.
You know, you can hear a joke 20 times and maybe not laugh as loudly, but when everyone else is hearing it for the first time, you laugh a little louder.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And same thing, you feel the things.
Yes.
Harder too.
Absolutely. So we've sort of talked about the Muppet movie a little bit. We're going to talk about it more, but first, let's jump ahead to 1981. The Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah.
Queen of London, Rob.
My dress!
and we'll catch those jewel thieves for you.
We're actually in Great Britain.
We'll never get to England now.
Places where you can park your carcasses. The Happiness Hotel.
I'd hate to see what the sad one looks like.
We'll be right in.
Modeling is my life. I shall accept nothing less.
I can offer you a job as a receptionist.
Lady Holiday.
Kermit's got a date with Lady Holiday.
Kermit and Lady Holiday, all right.
That's my new receptionist dancing out there.
Which one?
The pig.
She's sensational.
45 words a minute. About average.
Hello.
Your dancing partner happens to be a jewel thief. What do you think of that?
He's a frog, isn't he?
Yes.
We've got to plant the goods on her to take the heat off us.
Miss Piggy stole my necklace. I can't even sing. Your voice was dubbed.
If we want to get Miss Piggy out of jail, we're going to have to catch those thieves red-handed.
What color are their hands now?
We're about to embark on a potentially dangerous mission. There could be physical violence, and there's the slightest chance that somebody might even get killed.
I'm out.
Max Turner wants stunts, they get a double.
Pig, light me up the outside of the house, dude.
Just watch my dreams come.
I know your whole story.
This is something I was born to
do. You're wearing my mustache. You're overacting, you're hamming it up.
I am not. I am trying to save this movie.
Oh, yeah, we'll save your performance instead.
Would you believe it, Statler? They're heroes. Now they're going to be obnoxious. You are all weirdos.
Oh, that makes me happy. That makes me so happy.
It's such a great, like, I know I mentioned the end of the first movie before, but it's such a great traveling from the end of the first movie mm-hmm. where it's life's a movie, and then this movie begins yeah. with, hey, a movie. Yeah. So, like, it's so this meta element of it. And also the phrase, we're gonna be a movie. Is really funny to me. What did you guys think? I love this movie.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
What I love about this is this one and the one after it is Jim Henson and then Frank Oz. And you can get a sense of who they are by what they choose to show in these movies.
Because who directed which ones?
Well, this one was Jim.
This one was Jim.
And the next one is Frank.
Yeah. Right.
And there's so much, like Frank's movie, you get a sense that like you can actually remove the Muppets and have real people do it and it would be the same movie. But Jim's movie, the Muppets seem so much more integral to the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It couldn't be anybody but the Muppets.
Could not be anybody but, and they also each, I don't know their relationship personally, mm-hmm. but there is such beauty in the way they do each other's things. That I can't imagine it was anything but deep, deep respect. And you can get it from these two movies. Which is why I like these two movies more. Because your turn, my turn.
Right.
And not that terrible like Shatner Nimoy, your turn, my turn. But really like this is what I see and this is what you see. There's something beautiful about it.
Let's talk about some moments in this one or things in this one that did Paul Williams do the music for this one as well?
No, this was Joe Raposo.
This was Joe Raposo.
And the first time it happens was nominated for an Oscar for best song.
That is the first time
yes.
it happens.
It's the longest song in the film. Know. That's with the dance break and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's glorious.
What do you guys like?
I liked it because, you know, when you watch it when you're young, You get like all the stuff you want, like, oh, this could be actually cool. And I did like costume dramas. I know I didn't like singing and kissing. Loved costume dramas. Loved them. Like if My Fair Lady had no kissing, no singing, best movie I've ever seen.
There's no kissing in My Fair Lady. They never kiss.
Well, Pickering and Higgins
they do like a sing.
A gentlemanly peck in between them. As men would.
Which cut did you see?
This one. The one I'm working on in my head. But I liked the fact that they come on and they go, we're going to be playing characters and I'm going to be this and I'm going to be that. And then they go to London and solve a caper in fantasy trope no time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is somewhere between 1900 and now. But
that's one of the beautiful things of it, because you put Gonzo in a trench coat with an old-timey camera, and a trench coat can be from any.
And the Argyle sweater, which also shows up in the next film. I love Gonzo's.
There you go.
Again, I love fashion in films. I love
the costumes in this film never get talked about. So I love that you're mentioning it. They really
they're
are beautiful.
That was that, I look on those things a lot. Also, Miss Piggy's hair also dictates the power of a film to me.
Yeah.
I do love the last one, but that tight perm is awful.
I agree. Yeah.
It's not flattering to her face.
In the third
but
movie.
It was 1984, and that's what was happening.
Yeah.
I'm sad to
She's a full-faced woman, and I would something that would elongate the form. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know what to tell you.
Big Farrah Fawcett giant waves that she had in the first one, but something the second one I thought was an elegant
waving curl.
Yeah, but she got married in that terrible perm. Now what's she looking at? Her and Kermit are looking at those pictures. Like I look terrible. And Kermit, you always look the same. You haven't aged. But I look at my hair choice.
Welcome to womanhood, my friend. Welcome, my sisters. Agreed.
Yeah, Kermit hasn't changed since she removed the second ruff under his neck. But since then, he just doesn't age.
Deep cut double color Kermit reference. I'm impressed.
Yeah.
Fashion is how it goes for me.
He does know his Muppet fashion.
Yeah.
Fashion is,
No, but I was having this conversation with someone that no one talks about the costumes in this movie and like the three Charles Grodin's ladies, Carla, Marla, and Darla.
Yeah, those are amazing.
In that scene by the elevator, they have little hat pins with their initials on them if you look closely. There's a little C, a little M. Yeah, it's adorable.
Is it because the whole thing is happening with a fashion designer? You've got
some of it, but I think that this movie is a love letter to Hollywood. It's a love letter to old school Hollywood musicals.
Yeah.
It's a love. All the movie tropes are there. Mistaken identity, jailed for a wrongful reason. The Busby Berkeley, people breaking out into song, the kinds of dances, the getting ready for the big date dance, the Fred Astaire moments, the denouement. I mean, and it's funny, the big water ballet, the fantasy moments, every trope in the TCM, that you'd see on TCM is hit with this movie. And this movie really is an underrated movie musical, whether it be Muppet or non. It really should be held up with all of the great classic films, of the 50s. This hits all of that and it's shot beautifully.
Yeah.
It's shot with that in mind. So the story hits it. The costumes hit it. I think that's what I was saying. The costumes hit it for that reason. The shots hit it for that reason.
And the jokes land really well. The idea Kermit and Fozzie are twin brothers.
Yeah.
And no only when they wear their hats.
That's right.
And then Jack Warden saying, I knew your father, and then shows a picture.
Monster of both Fozzie and Kermit.
Oh, and that's the other trope. The grizzled old newspaper editor trope that's in every movie. Like, I love that. They hit all of those beats.
I want to talk briefly about one of my favorite elements of this movie is the Happiness Hotel. The Happiness Hotel, just because the Muppets in the first movie left the Muppet studio or the Muppet theater and they came out into the real world. It was the first time you're seeing Muppets in the real world. And then they go to London and they find a place that is like a Muppet haven in the real world. Because you don't see the rest of the movie. There's not a ton of Muppets elsewhere. But the ratio of Muppets to non-Muppets in the Happiness Hotel it's where all the Muppets just wind up.
So it's a Muppet discount.
There's a deep, deep Muppet discount.
Well, when the Muppets go into the real world, like they eat.
Yeah.
And nobody's just like, Muppets. those are like, there's a guy under the table. And their hands are eating. Isn't that weird? Like, that never happens.
Their hands are eating.
Their hands. Oh, in the third film, do you remember when Kermit, I'm jumping around, Kermit goes into like a Sardi's and puts his picture up.
Yeah.
And goes and eats and tries to cause that, what was the whisper panic or whatever
we call
it?
The whisper campaign.
Yeah, the whisper campaign. Wouldn't they do that even if he didn't put his picture up? Like, that's Kermit the Frog. He's made out of like felt and stuff. And there's a guy under him.
But in New York, you see that every day. I mean, that's not necessarily an unusual thing.
When I go eat, I'm under the table with my hand up there. Hello, can we have a... Yeah. Of course.
But I
have a sock. It's an old school sock that I like to eat with.
But I think that speaks to what really worked for the Muppets back then, is that people didn't look at it as an odd thing. That none of the actors in those movies said, well, you're a frog and you don't really look like a frog.
Right.
You look like a puppet frog. You look like a Muppet. Like,
he does not look like a frog.
No, he doesn't. No. But they'd say, you know, Doc Hopper would say the frog's right. The bear's right. And people believe it. And that helps the audience believe it. And in these films, nobody did a wink wink. And speaking of nobody doing a wink wink, can I just say Charles Grodin
is the perfect villain in this movie.
He's great.
But also, there's never a moment where you don't believe he is in love with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
His
because he is staring into those blinking eyes.
Those plastic eyes that don't move.
No, there's a
but
mechanism
they sparkle.
In it.
If you notice, there's a little diamond and the little crystal in there to catch the light.
I did notice that. Then I started looking at the other Muppets.
Yeah.
Going, do they all have a little light refraction? And then I started thinking, like, there's every big name Muppet realize, you know, you have Link Hog, whatever his
Hog
name.
Link
Hog, yeah. Real eyes. Everybody's working with little black dots. Gil, Jill, little, you know.
Yeah, all the other pigs.
Kermit has better eyes. Yeah, that's how you know you're in the presence of a star Muppet. They don't have little black eyes.
Even Julius Strange Pork has the beady eyes.
Yeah.
So he doesn't, he's like, somehow he gets to hang out with the full eye pigs.
Yeah.
But
even
then,
full eye pigs,
His mother was a full eye pig.
What
so
do
they
you know? You're not
with them.
But then Floyd has tubes.
Yeah.
No,
Janice's eyes are closed.
I'm always looking at Janice's hair.
Yes.
Because,
first you look at it and you're like, I know what that feels like. I know the texture of her hair, you know, because the other ones you're like, oh, I know what Marabou feels like. But that you're like, I think my dad had a spool of Janice hair in the drawer next to the sink. That it's that special cording. And then you're trying to see how that little ponytail is working. And it like, that might be knotted inside her skull.
And you're not wrong, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
and then you want to touch it in your mind.
By the way, speaking of Janice, she has another one of my favorite bits in that film, which is every time there's group Walla and they die down, she's finishing a terrible truth about herself that she's been set, like they're talking about a plan and she's like, well, one time in college, man.
I think in the third one, she's talking about doing nudity in a scene.
Yeah, it's the second one. Look, buddy, I don't pose for, I don't pose for anyone, even if it is artistic.
This movie had my favorite joke in it, also of the Electric Mayhem, and it's when they're playing the Happiness Hotel song, and Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem take a musical break, and Animal's just going wild on the drums, and Kermit turns to Floyd and says, "Oh, wow, your drummer seems really angry." And Floyd goes, "Yeah, it's because he's missing the Rembrandt exhibit at the National Gallery." And you just hear Animal from off screen correct him, Renoir! Like, that joke to me is sublime. Should we go check out the third movie?
Sure, from 1984, The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Together again.
Let's go to Broadway!
It's going to be together again.
And we've got a show that we think you're going to want to produce on Broadway. And it opens with a great number. It goes like this.
You can't take no for an answer.
We're going to get this show on Broadway.
You can't take no for an
answer. I'll be on Broadway tomorrow.
No.
Songs, dances, shootings.
That coming, what should we
do? I don't know. We failed, okay? Tried and we failed.
We do depend on him too much.
Like, he feels too responsible for us.
We've had some job offers.
They're kind of out of town.
We go bye-bye.
We still believe in the show.
I'm going to get him back. I'm going to sell that show, and we're all going to be on Broadway.
It's totally today, yet tremendously timeless, and I am giving you first look-see because we're like family.
It's dancing, it's music, it's pathos.
My name's Jenny.
I'm Kermit.
Hi, Kermit.
I'm a frog.
Oh, Kermit.
You gave Jenny the Huggies?
My frog turned on me. I care!
Well, I care too!
Well, why don't you say so?
I just did! Gonna be a little dumpy dum dum.
So put some jello down your pants.
But I want to produce your show on Broadway.
Tell Piggy she's gonna be a star!
She's loyal, Piggy. He's playing. He's dying!
The writer and the star of my show is missing.
You have amnesia. We have got to find Kermit.
I'm looking for a frog who can sing and dance.
If he can also balance the budget, I'll hire him.
The show must go on.
It's Kermit!
We have a show to put on, your show, and it's opening tonight.
Yeah. If the first movies, if the second movie was a love letter to old Hollywood,
yeah.
This one feels like a love letter to New York City.
Yeah.
Would you guys agree?
But
with
it
that?
Still has the same, let's hit every trope we know. Like,
yeah.
Literally, let's put on a show and let's take it to Broadway, which of course New York needs that. Like, let's do a show by like Hicks in college about what they think New York is and put it in New York. That's exactly what we want to see. They're going to have a real fresh take on Manhattan.
You know, I always joke about imagining what the reviews the next day were for Manhattan Melodies. I just think about, I mean, we don't really know if the show is any good.
I think it would be terrible. I think Dabney Coleman, when he says, and there's shootings involved with this, and they're like, there's no shootings, there's only friendship and love. He might have had a point. Like, can we put, like, at least a car chase in it? Which I also don't like in films. I don't, which is another reason why I think the first one has too many car chases. There's too many car chases.
I would love to see you put a car chase on a Broadway stage.
They just had a car chase.
Did they really?
Yes, in Groundhog Day.
Did they?
If you guys saw Groundhog Day, it was brilliant the way they did it. They did an overhead vertical view.
Oh.
So they had people come out with cars on sticks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Aim them so the sticks are parallel to the floor. And what the audience seeing looks like an overhead view of few city blocks as the cars are making their way around.
Oh,
it was gorgeous.
I love good stagecraft. That's amazing.
No, a car chase on a stage, I would love to see. In a movie, I don't want to see it. It's boring.
So French Connection is not your bag.
You don't like
There's a lot of talking in French Connection.
And no kissing?
Do you just fast forward through a lot of it? If I know what's going to happen at the end of the car chase, yes, I will fast forward. I will go like prepare a snack. I groaned. When I was watching the last Star Trek, I'm like, I can make so many snacks. There's not enough talking.
You're talking apples and oranges, car chases in the last Star Trek there.
Well, that had car chases. It just, they weren't cars. And it was
motorcycles.
Car chase as a metaphor for action that I know the conclusion of.
I see.
Right. Like in all
and
Star
physically
Wars.
A car chase. I also don't want to watch cars chase
like
each other.
Every Star Wars prequel.
Right.
Except for Rogue One, which it didn't have as many car chases in it.
There are fewer
metaphorically,
quote unquote, car chases.
Yeah. The other ones did have a lot of car chases and physical car chases, but that has nothing to do with Muppets.
Songs from this one.
Yeah.
Can I give an unpopular hot take that's tied to the music by Jeff Moss, which I actually like?
I really like the music in this
movie. I cried at the beginning of this film and the end, just in case you're keeping score. Did not cry during The Great Muppet Caper. This, I will tell you, this is my least favorite of the three. And I
this
feel like
Muppet State Manhattan.
Yeah, I feel like the Muppet Babies number, which I know a lot of people love, completely is in there just as a device that I don't care for. I would remove that from the movie.
What is the device?
It's a lot of fun.
Did you think it was a spinoff device? What did you think that device was?
Because
that
was not designed to create the cartoon.
It was not designed.
No. What was it?
It was just a device like, hey, we have this number. Let's do them as kids. And the thing is, like, what would it be like if we were kids and met? And then, okay, first of all, are they siblings in this nursery?
It is weird.
So probably love? Yeah. Are they all orphans?
I don't know.
We don't know.
But it's imagined.
I know. I understand what you're saying. Like, when Miss Piggy goes, if we met as kids, I would think that they would be in high school.
Yes.
Yeah. But instead, they're infants.
Yes.
And they're in some sort of weird camp of Muppets where they're just kept in this one. You don't know why they're there.
Wow.
You want my theory?
Does it matter if we want it?
Fozzie's a robot in that scene. He's a robot, and he's the overlords put him in the Muppet Babies in this movie. Put him in to monitor the other Muppets because it's a breeding facility.
Why Fozzie? Like, why him and not any of the others?
No one suspects the bear.
What about Fozzie in the Muppet Babies number?
Because Fozzie's funny, and no one's ever going to be like, oh, the comedian little bear is a machine sent by the overlords to watch the breeding facility.
You know it's a fantasy, right?
It's my fantasy. That Fozzie inside of that. Because I have the same opinion. I do love this movie. Yeah. It might be one of my favorites, actually. Okay. But I also, not just because it's singing, which I don't like, I also have this kind of squeamishness to baby talk songs and that weird fantasy. Yet, are you going to say that Kermit isn't adorable? And then if you're sitting there, just go, oh, he's so cute.
They're adorable. I love the song. I don't dislike the piece. It just feels like it doesn't fit there. Stephanie?
Yeah. Well, it's more, I think my problem with it is cute. And for what it is, you know, within the movie, it's what it wrought upon the world that I have a problem with.
Oh, Muppet Babies?
Well, not just Muppet Babies. Remember, there was Flintstones Babies and Scooby-Doo Babies and all those other baby shows that came in the 80s. You're
Nightmare
too
on
young.
Elm Street Babies.
You don't remember.
I remember them.
You're young.
I'd like to think so.
Okay, good. No, you just look so fresh-faced.
Well,
it's staying out of the sun.
Drink virgin blood and baby blood, which is virgin blood. I'd like to point that out.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's how I keep this young pallor. Also, stay out of the sun.
Yeah, stay out of the sun. But seriously, like what the Muppet Babies wrought upon Saturday morning, it makes me feel terrible inside to know that.
Chronological progenitor of that let's make everything babies
because it wasn't until the success of that moment in the film that anybody thought about doing Muppet Babies the show. That was
it's the same setting and costume, same outfit, same everything.
It was not meant that in the movie was never meant to be a spinoff.
Right.
It was just, oh my gosh, this is really popular. And I think, and Craig can back me up, the reason why it wasn't puppets is because Jim was so busy with other things. He was busy pre-producing Labyrinth even at that time.
Can we hate something for what its imitators did? It was something so good and so powerful that everybody wanted to try it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to hate this. If it spawned nothing, there's still a quality about it that I'll tell you why I love this movie. For a moment there, Kermit the Frog is dead. Just for a moment, Kermit the Frog is dead.
I think he's just unconscious.
They don't show it.
He's unconscious.
No, there is a moment. There's a car accident.
There's no light.
And then they're talking about what happened to Kermit. What a mind can race and wander and go. They just killed Kermit the Frog.
No, because you see his head moving. Just that's very important.
That's that thing she was talking about before. You don't want to keep it still.
That's right.
You gotta give it a little life.
He has a little life, and if you notice
he's made a frog. The wind can make his head do that. And I'm too busy in a panic to look.
Saying,
at,
sir,
to like go back and go.
My job.
It's okay. I'm just saying that I'm watching a film, and I'm not looking. Does he have a pulse? I see Kermit on the road. I hear car accident. I go. They killed Kermit.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what we do to make you think that Kermit actually died. We make you believe he was alive to begin with.
Okay. There it is.
Thank you.
I hear a car crash and I see a Kermit lying on the street. I'm not going over there and like get a heartbeat on Kermit. I'm a kid watching this and I go, well, Kermit the Frog is dead. Till they resolve it.
Temporarily unconscious.
Yeah.
This is
to give him the biggest trope in the world, which is amnesia, where he starts working with other frogs, which I remember loving when I first saw it.
I have to go work with
frogs.
He's
finally home with these kind of muted color frogs who work in advertising. And it felt like so good to like.
Gil, Phil.
Yeah.
Jill.
Yeah. Before Kermit was this isolated thing in my head, sure, there was a Robin and those kind of things. But like the fact that there might be a town of frogs and they worked in advertising, it made me feel good. And when Kermit went and became a part of that, I'm like, I think Kermit is home. I don't think he should go back into musicals. I think he should stay with these people.
Well, you don't like musicals.
Mary Jill.
Isn't it interesting that the first movie, Kermit spends his whole life running away from doing commercial work for the man, but then in the third movie, he's working in advertising.
He becomes an ad man.
Yeah. And they all go back to college in the third film. Like, the first thing they do is graduating from college.
Yes.
From theater school.
Yes.
Theater school. Yeah. Is that what it was?
Well, it was college, but they were doing a show.
From Danhurst College? Fictional.
It does feel like I loved all three of these movies, but
this one to me, it does feel, the plot of this one feels like they tried to fit in every trope that was, that they hadn't used yet in a movie, mm-hmm. or every plot device. So the plot for this one, it just seems kind of all over the map to me.
It is a little weird. But I think there's a lot to be said for the very unique pacing that it has. Because mm-hmm. There is something slow and gentle about the pacing of this mm-hmm. film where it's not boffo. It really is an un-boffo film.
Right.
That there's something beautiful about that. That these Muppets can take a pacing that you would barely use for like live action stuff that they do with puppets, I think is really unique and gets you deeper into, oh, these aren't puppets at all.
Yeah.
These are just the characters that we love in a film. And Kermit's acting in this, like the actual Jim Henson's acting mm-hmm. is over the top good.
Yeah.
If that was just Jim, you would go, this guy's a really great actor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think when the one problem with Muppets that I have is that people always see Muppets first and then performing second. Yeah. And it kind of, it's not as good for the performers because people are no longer wowed by the magic trick. And not, you know, it's hard to mm-hmm. be great in those things, but you know, Jim Henson and Frank Oz were really good actors. This movie shows it, I think, more than the other ones.
I think there's on the idea of these characters and this acting too. One thing that's great about this movie for me is that, there are such sad moments in it. Like mm-hmm. when this group gets split up, not ultimately, but when they fail early on in the movie and they're like, well, this is not going to happen. And everyone goes their separate ways.
They go because Kermit yells at them.
Yeah. Yeah. Kermit tells them that like he can't solve all their problems.
Yeah. Yeah. They're leaving to help him. To take the burden off of him.
And it's genuinely sad. It's genuinely.
When you saw this movie.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Did you see when it came out?
Yes.
Yeah.
So did that color your interpretation of it? Because when you saw the first one, you were much younger and Muppets were a really powerful thing. But when you saw this one, did that have any color to why you don't think it's as brilliant as the first two?
It felt dark to me, and it felt like mm-hmm. Kermit turning and yelling at them and then going, sorry, I snapped. Like, that was just a weird moment that didn't feel antithetical, but mm-hmm. I guess I have my idea of what the Muppets are to me, and that it did not feel like that. It felt like I don't want to see them fight in that way
right. mm-hmm.
and see them have to split up. The scene with where Rolf goes and is running a kennel, or working at a kennel, which is
it's a great scene.
His interaction,
James Coco.
Yeah, his interaction with James Coco, especially was like, are you going to write that down? And Rolf just points at his head to indicate that he's got a steel trap memory. Yeah.
Write it down.
But even that becomes dark as soon as James Coco leaves and all the dogs are like, fresh meat!
Yeah, they start hazing the actual dog.
And they want to be let out of the cages and there's an odd turn where Rolf is in charge and then he's howling with. It's a very like, it's super sad. They all have it. I love the idea that as a group, that these friends are stronger together than they ever will be apart. And that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I had the exact.
That's the most important. That was where I was.
But it gets aiming so with sad. That.
I
so
wanted sad. Everybody to never speak to each other again. I might be a monster because I didn't have that reaction at all. I was like, well, Rolf seems to have a really good job. Like, this is, everybody got real jobs. Gonzo was working with, six chickens?
Doing a stunt show. Yeah,
yeah, like he's going to go back on the road after. That's his dream job.
Surrounded by chickens.
Kermit is working with frogs. I think the fourth movie should have been just them living separate lives. Darker.
What, a Robert Altman film?
Where you get to Sam the Eagle's divorce. Like, run that out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I could say something and I'm not going to. No. I mean, I think that dark place you're talking about is where the last series went. And
I was not happy when that series started.
And I think that was what the Muppets is about, positivity. The Muppets has been about mm-hmm. making your own family.
Right.
No, but I'm saying that The great thing about a Muppet character is that it has all the emotions that we share. We identify with them. Right. And they have to be able to be sad in order to be happy. You have to have failure in order to appreciate success.
Right. You want
so
the dark and the
light. You can't just have tinky, tinky, tink, we're happy all the time, because then that would be condescending and juvenile. And that's what people sometimes misconceive the Muppets as being.
Right. So you're
it's only when they get to those places.
You
that
like
are real.
When this one goes right. a little dark because it gets light again?
Well, because things are learned. And it's not darkness for darkness's sake. It's not dark for cynicism's sake. Because like you said, they chose to go their separate ways to help their friend.
Right.
They thought they were being a burden on their leader. And it's a step.
Right. And
that,
there's nothing cynical about strife.
This is something where they genuinely feel like, oh my gosh, we're taking advantage of him. We rely on him too
right.
much.
I entirely agree with
He'd
you.
He'd be
on
better
this.
Off. I didn't love the moment where Kermit, you know, yelled at him when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as an adult, I can appreciate like, hey man, the characters have to grow. And this, I think, was the attempt at, let's see where these characters are going to go. We don't mm-hmm. have a Muppet. This was the first film that was done after The Muppet Show ended production.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, because Muppet Caper, they were in their last season of The Muppet Show. So this is where, this was probably the big experiment of where are these characters going to go? I don't think that when Jim created The Muppet Show, he thought this was going to be a forever thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I would totally agree. But this also has, although it has a big split,
yeah.
the ending of this movie is the marriage of Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy.
I was just going to ask you about that.
The ending isn't really an ending. I think that's a dramaturgical flaw in the film.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not an ending. Also, it is not terribly realistic that Kermit is going to go up on stage and end his Broadway musical debut getting duped by Miss Piggy into actually marrying him with... Oh, sorry. Here's a real priest.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that if you let yourself go on this journey temporarily, you right. can get caught up in the suspension of disbelief. It is very pretty.
It's a very beautiful scene.
It's got every Muppet known to man. There's a lot to distract you from the dramaturgical flaw that's about to happen.
Does that feel like fan service? Because there are so many people who enjoyed that coupling. It was like, they should get married. And now you're seeing, cause to me, that feels like we're not going to make more films with these characters. We've given you the ending that you want. And now we're going to take a break.
There was a conversation when Frank did the panel here a couple of weeks ago. Frank actually said it was a great way to see what would happen with the characters moving forward, because you could argue they were really married. There was a real priest. It wasn't a real marriage. It was a movie mm-hmm. that we made. So it was a
musical inside of a movie that they made.
Well, because bear in mind, these aren't really just movies for movie's sake. No other actor lives their life as the character outside of a film. Even someone mm-hmm. playing James Bond is not going on the Today Show saying, so James, what about you and Moneypenny, huh? What's going on there?
Right.
But when Kermit and Piggy appear on a show, they are going on as characters. The characters live outside the shows and they live outside the films in a way that no other characters
But
do.
Kermit and Piggy are still playing characters within a movie.
Right. So what...
Characters
what,
in a movie, in a play, in a movie.
Right. Yeah. Right. So what Muppets Take Manhattan, I think, had to do for the characters at that time in the Muppets history is give something to move forward with.
Mm-hmm.
With no Muppet Show happening, with, you know, but appearances were still happening. They still did things.
Right.
They still showed up. So... let's give people something to talk about. Let's give the characters a place to go. And is that the best thing to happen in a self-contained movie? I don't know.
Right.
But that's one rationale for that ending. It's not my favorite movie.
I don't
hate
the ending.
But it's not really an ending.
Right.
Like I remember, I've always
I would
like
to see Linda Lavin come back.
Yeah, you want to see what the reviews are.
Yeah,
it's the ending of the musical, not the movie.
But that would
that
be a
seeing.
Very sad ending. I have a feeling it's just going to close in a week.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw there was artwork upstairs, for conceptual art of Muppets Take Manhattan. And in the conceptual art, I know the name that they wind up going with is, what is it? Manhattan, Melodies.
Yes.
But in the artwork upstairs, in the drawing, the musical that they are doing is called Moi with an exclamation point.
That would have been.
It's like on a tiny little drawing. It's just Miss Piggy on a poster and it's Moi is the show. And I love the idea of a musical just called Moi. Yeah. Starring Miss Piggy. We should start trying to figure out which of these is going to ultimately win and which movie that, these fine Muppet fans are going to be watching.
This can't be done. I'm going to tell you the inherent flaw. Number one, it's a little bit, it's going to be the first movie. I can smell that on this stage. You're going to believe that there are no bad Muppet movies. You want the first
you
one.
You are so wrong.
You want the
you don't and know me, sir.
I am going to take whatever film nobody else wants because that's the idiot that I am.
Yeah.
So we made
best Star Trek film episode, and the first thing you said was, well, it's not Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. No, I just don't want to be who wants to be a part of that discussion?
What?
So what do you think the best Devil Went Down to Georgia, best song by
The Charlie Daniels
Charlie Daniels Band? Right, okay, bye. Let's go. You can't do that. You have to have this some sort of spirit of investigation so people realize that all these films have something in them.
Well, but sure.
That's why I'm taking the underdog. All wonderful films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm taking the underdog. I'm just going to say that.
Now, Mark, I would have pegged Mark as a Muppets Take Manhattan guy because it's let's put on a show and let's go.
He's first or second
Broadway.
Film.
I am first film. For me, it has always been the original Muppet movie. It is.
Why?
It gives an origin story for each of the characters. It does meta better than any other movie I've ever seen, Muppet or not. I think that the music and the songs are all perfect. It's got the perfect opening number. The
helicopter
long
shot
straight down into Kermit singing Rainbow Connection. It is to me a perfect movie.
Interesting.
It's hard to not accept. The songs in the first film are so good.
Yep.
So good. And second film, I didn't like the music that much. Third film, I think the songs are actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But the first film, the songs are so good. Like, they're part of everybody's collective understanding of music. Everybody knows Rainbow Connection. Marching bands play it.
One of my favorite things to do at a karaoke bar is to, choose Rainbow Connection. They call me up, you know, they do the, like, they call a person up to the stage, choose Rainbow Connection, and then never go on stage. And the whole bar sings the song.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
You choose Rainbow Connection, like, everybody do it! And the whole bar will sing Rainbow Connection.
Yeah, so it's hard to say that, and the novelty of it, to finally see these characters that were stuck on, you know, TV and Sesame mm-hmm. Streets and little places, walking around the actual world, driving real cars.
You don't want to pick this movie, but you can't help it.
I cannot,
can't help but pick the Muppet movie.
Yeah, but when we get to the second one, I feel just as strongly. Like, there's that. The second one was also to finally see them not play themselves was mm-hmm. really a revelation. It was beautiful, especially when, for a kid. I was like, they're actors. You know, it's huge amount of meta going on that, like, they're people with puppets playing in a movie about them playing characters in another movie. And as a kid, you grasp it just enough to go, wow.
There you go.
And it meant something big. And the first one didn't have that, but it really did give you the idea that, like, they're real. The movie goes off and they're still really walking around and stuff. And that's pretty good. But the second one, I think, was just had all those kind of things. And it had the stuff that I loved when I was younger, which is, you know, intrigue and costumes.
No kissing.
Not as much kissing as other films would
Very
have.
Very few car chases.
The first one had a lot of car chasing.
But now, yes. You got, okay.
There was a lot of, like, physical car chasing.
We're going
and
down the line
switching.
Here. If you have to pick one. You've got to pick one. You're picking the second film as your...
You think is the best.
You think that The Great Muppet Caper is the best of the three.
I just want to know what you think the underdog would have been.
Yeah.
Muppets Take Manhattan. I really think Muppet Takes Manhattan is the underdog because the novelty was... All the things had kind of been done in these first two, but yet... I really love Muppets Take Manhattan. I think it is underrated as just a successful musical film that people don't really talk about. And when I was discussing this with people, they were like, oh, Muppet Treasure Island and stuff. Muppets Take Manhattan, people were like, I don't quite remember that one. It really was a weird moment that It was their waning hour.
Well, Burger King didn't make glasses from Muppets Take Manhattan, did they? I had the full set of Great Muppet Caper glasses.
Yeah, sure.
Oh,
the Happiness Hotel bus wrapped all the way around the
house. A lot of products for Great Muppet Caper.
Oh, yeah.
Chock full of lid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
That's why they don't make those glasses. Yeah, you don't drink out of those glasses.
I drink out of my Miss Piggy crashing through on a motorcycle.
Whoops. In the glass or the...
Oh,
or
so
the
you guys have no idea what my name is.
Glass,
I have permanent amnesia.
Or the glass. Like, there was something about the way those particular glasses were made with lead. That's why they don't make those kinds of glasses anymore.
So which was your favorite movie?
Just want to take a brief pause.
That's why they were so sweet and delicious when my tongue touched them.
I not only have... all the Great Muppet Caper glasses, but I have all the Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars and Snoopy glasses. My wife
but
and
you
I
won't
both
drink
to be
booze
airlifted
with me, but
to
you'll
the
drink
nearest
lead.
Medical center immediately.
I mean, that's what that's the tale that
well,
I told.
While before my brain turns completely into liquid and pours out of my ears.
Sorry.
Stephanie.
No. I'm diehard. Like, I wanted to do this particular panel because I have very strong feelings about Great Muppet Caper. I think is one of the best films.
She likes Caper.
I do. And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
So, Muppet Movie is a classic, and the soundtrack is glorious, and it does have some of my favorite music in it, but you look at it, and you can tell it was an experiment. They weren't even using the best film stock. And as good a quality as we can get restored, it still has this grainy, not independent-looking film, but it does have that independent film. Caper, my gosh, every penny is, it is so beautiful in every way. It is so meticulous. I started counting the number of shots in some of these. In First Time It Happens, two verses and a bridge go by before there's a cut because it's all about the movement that's happening. He uses human extras and Muppet extras beautifully. And I mean, come on, just the writing is sparkling. And then you have these scenes with John Cleese. Out of nowhere, you have a
super slow, weird John Cleese scene
with Peter Falk.
That is an amazingly long.
That has no point.
But it's,
no, that I love.
It's brilliant.
I love that. It was like the movie stops for a second. You get to watch Peter Falk talk to Kermit,
and he says, "We're trying to do a movie here."
Yeah.
You know, and Peter, yes, exactly. The cameos in that film are there for a reason. The songs are great. The musical numbers, each one of them, is a gem. Oh. And, okay, the thing that I was going to tell you about in the other room about process and puppeteering. So of all the things in that film, the bicycle riding and the underwater ballet and all the dancing and the tap dancing and this and that, what do you think is the hardest thing that had to be done in that film?
Oh, yes, I was remembering this.
No, I mean, it's hard. These things are all difficult.
Wait, wasn't the bending bars in the third one?
No, that's the second one. She's breaking out of jail.
No, but she also bends the bars in front of, Piggy, hey, sexy Piggy.
The hardest thing for a performer to do for a
Kermit
moment.
Putting on pants in Steppin' Out with a Star.
Oh.
Steppin' Out with a Star looks like it's the easiest number in the world because it's just three Muppets. There's a mirror in there. There are so many shots. In that film, Kermit is on a drill. They move the film backwards so the Kermit can get the hat on his head. Kermit puts on pants. Now you think about.
I don't get mad at
what?
You.
No. That's just.
I mean,
get
mad at you for an hour.
I walked into a wall.
No,
I know.
But
Kermit, I can't put on pants.
That's not you. That's
I
just
have
my
problems
general,
with that too. I get the felt hands.
That's just my general righteous indignation about. Don't you realize what is involved with rods and assists and people? But like Kermit. He doesn't have live hands, so you can't use that. Those feet have to be attached to some sort of rod. The pants have to be attached to something. And he does it in such a way that I guarantee you, no one who is not a puppeteer has ever thought twice about that moment where Kermit is pulling on the leg of his pants. But for any other actor in any other movie, that'd just be something you'd gloss over. It's three puppets in a room.
Because both of them put them on one leg at a time, just like every other person.
Like every other.
Also, I've never had an opportunity to do a movie where I'm like, why am I not wearing pants in this movie?
That's right. But, well, that's the other thing. Maybe that's why Kermit doesn't wear pants. It's because they're way too hard to put on. But it's little things like that where, that number, for a long time, even for me, seemed like a throwaway number. And then after I became a Muppet performer, I look at that through totally different eyes. I'm like, there's a lot going on there, but it's disguised to make you believe that nothing is going on there except Kermit getting ready for this date. And that's what movies do better than anything else, and that's what the Muppets do better than anything else, is create that illusion. You don't see the effort. You don't see the sweat. You don't see how many people had to make that happen because it's all happening out of the shot. Anyway, that I feel very strongly about the beauty of Caper.
I like that.
So and right I could now, watch it over and over.
It's two for the Muppet movie.
No, I think I'm going for the last one.
He's Manhattan.
So does that mean
it's a tiebreaker?
Wait a minute. We have one person for each movie. I get to pick.
Yeah.
I get to pick.
I just if you
Hal,
what movie is Linda Lavin in? Linda Lavin, she is inches away from
not selling.
Yes. Please.
No, it's all about Linda Lavin. It's all about Linda Lavin. Listen, how close she was to Kiss My Grits? Inches. That could have been hers.
I get it.
That could have been hers. There's a Scorsese connection from Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore to Alice. And there's Linda Lavin playing a doctor. Brooke Shields? You want some Brooke Shields? Here she is.
I don't.
Where do you want those things? Okay. I'll tell you where to put them. The last one.
I'm angry at him. I'm not.
Yeah, let's take Manhattan. Have these things.
Allow me for a moment to relish this great power that I have in this room.
I think I want to change mine.
I can tell you.
Do you want a lot of rats working in a restaurant?
No.
Where are you going to go?
I don't want that.
You're going to go to Manhattan
with
the Muppets. That's what you don't want.
Have you met Hal? He hand sanitizes after washing his hands because his hands might be dirty from touching each other.
All right.
These are very clean rats. One of them has a tattoo and fur. Solve that riddle.
The one that looks like Shipwreck from G.I. Joe?
Yeah, he's got like the anchor.
I will tell you, I've gone back and forth ever since I found out we were doing this. Because the one that was my favorite from childhood, I thought was the best. And then I rewatched them and I thought that another one was clearly the best. Mm-hmm. And then over the course of this conversation, I was swung from my current position. What was my current position to what I'm going to pronounce now?
Wait.
Yes. I'll give you one more pitch.
Are we really going for a consensus?
Look, we generally don't just vote for this show. We'd have to find consensus. But
yeah, if
I
we wanted to consensus,
Stephanie was quite persuasive.
Allow me.
She was persuasive to me, but I don't have a lot in life. This is my moment.
Okay, you know what?
She made an excellent point with the experimentation of the first one, making me think. That's another reason. Great songs. It was the great experiment.
Yes. It was. Absolutely.
It was the great experiment.
That makes me want to put my vote over to that one. Can I change it now?
To the experiment one?
Well, I would not.
Well, I'm switching mine also.
No, I want one. Okay, what do you got? You want two?
Yeah.
I'll take one.
I think the bottom line is how really.
Here's what we're
going to
do. I'm going to put a seal on this. This has been a wonderful walkthrough. Not only, both of our guests.
Delightful.
For the people who stuck it out.
But also the Muppets.
You have all the power. Here it is.
In the time we've been here, children have been born.
Yeah.
These are all kind of seminal films in pop culture and in Muppet lore. And while the third one has great numbers and is a loving letter to Broadway, that is not the best Muppet movie.
It has Linda Lavin in it.
I
was really expecting your chair to go flying backwards, remote control style, and you just get like shot back through the thing.
which leaves the original.
Curtain comes down.
The Muppet Movie, The Great Experiment, or the love letter to all film, particularly classic film, The Great Muppet Caper.
Mm-hmm.
So it is to me to say, people of the world.
Oh, here we go. It's very exciting.
The greatest Muppet film of all time combines meta, humor, and music.
Not fair, you're describing all three.
To some perfect alchemy of what the Muppets are and what they stand for. But you forgot about the costumes. It's the Great Muppet Caper!
Yeah! Muppet Caper!
The greatest! The best of all the Muppet films. Look, the Muppet movie is great. It has the best music,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, inarguably.
Yes.
It is a great film for the Muppets getting together. But for them to have to make another film to not even try to top it, but figure out where to go next, and to have them continue that meta and make a movie together is brilliant. The John Cleese moment, which stands out,
yeah,
is brilliant. All of the appearances by celebrities, the cameos, as you said, they serve a purpose in the film. And also, Miss Piggy diving into water and then emerging.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. This really is Miss Piggy's
appeals to the Bugsby Berkeley lover in every child.
Exactly. All those kids out there who are Busby Berkeley.
Yeah, huge Busby Berkeley fans.
But this among all others, if you're a Miss Piggy fan, this is Miss Piggy's movie more than either of the other two. And she shines brilliantly in
best
that film.
Miss Piggy hair is in that film.
That's right.
Yes. Best motorcycle costume.
And let's not forget Dame Diana Rigg.
Yes.
And
oh, Dame Diana Rigg,
she
yeah.
is Absolutely. This, and how funny she is. Yes. And how funny she is allowed to be.
She's wonderful.
It's very rare. In fact, I can't think of a female actress in any of the other Muppet movies with a role that large.
Yeah, Linda Lavin. Oh, I'm
her
sorry.
Role, but her role isn't as large as Dame Diana Rigg. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's a cameo, and Diana Rigg is playing a major character.
Yeah, but Linda Lavin was.
Well, I know.
She was Alice.
Of course she was. Of course she was. And she worked with the late, great Vic Tayback. I will always remember.
Kiss my grits.
Kiss my grits.
Yep. Mel.
Dame Diana Rigg is amazing in it. And I also think, you know, the Muppet movie soundtrack has amazing music. It is wonderful. But I also do think Joe Raposo's music is nothing to sneeze at. I think he's underrated as a composer. I think a lot of people
I have a legitimate question.
Yeah.
Because the Muppets do a great job of staying away from pop culture. They create their own culture.
Do. Yes, they do.
And their jokes are based entirely on characters. It's something that you have to not just respect, but worship.
Yes. Not a Sam Nixon joke.
Where's the beef was spoken in Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes, it
Did
was.
It, was that a weird little slip?
I think it predates the Clara
I want it to so much.
No. I think those ads started in 84.
I think there's a reason why.
It's you think it's where's the beef for
yeah.
doing?
Yeah, I it's think it's. Way, I think it's a.
I'm gonna let it slide because I love those commercials.
Well, of course, who doesn't love those commercials?
Yeah, but if you watch it now, it's the one time it happens, and it's that moment of like.
Yeah. No,
did
you're
they
right.
really?
You're absolutely
you could,
right.
A stumble happened in this perfect machine.
No, that's what weird. Makes the Muppets so timeless is they really didn't. I mean, in any of the Muppet Show episodes, again, there was not a single Watergate joke. There was not a single, you know, it was not Saturday Night Live. It was
completely creating their own culture and being their own pop culture was a perfect thing to do.
And it was one of the reasons why that show was so successful all around the world. You didn't have to.
And in repeats.
Yeah. It
ages perfectly. Yeah.
But I mean, that's why I could play in all those countries.
But you have to explain people who Alice Cooper is and stuff. It's like, well.
Yeah, but I think for the most part, most of those guest stars were pretty internationally known. And I think it was the same thing with some
also,
of the
it didn't matter. When I watched it when I was a kid, I didn't know who easily 80% of those people were.
Right.
And
but that's
I
how you
care.
Learned.
It didn't matter.
I did not care.
Right, but isn't that how you learned?
Well, I don't need to.
Yeah. Who they were?
My James Coco education is not important, you know. Like, well, now you know. Go out and find more Jimmy Coco movies.
Well,
like, that doesn't matter. The point is that I did not care. And when somebody on who I was like, oh my God, Steve Martin is on, then you care so much. But it didn't rely on its guest stars. As a matter of fact,
no.
I enjoyed it. Despite the guest stars.
But didn't you ever have those moments where you saw a cameo in a Muppet movie first and you didn't know that actor and then you saw that actor in something else like, oh my God,
I saw the Muppet movie when I was this big, so most of them I was like, oh, that's the balloon seller from the Muppet movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's your entree into the world.
Yeah.
And I think that movies like that sometimes do a great service.
Well, that's Warner Brothers did that too.
Yeah.
A whole new can of worms. We're going to screen the movie here in a minute.
That's right. This one is asked and answered. It's Great Muppet Caper is the best.
I did not expect this.
Yay!
And I'm so happy.
Nobody expected it.
I am so happy. I really thought the first one was a shoo-in.
It's like the Spanish Inquisition.
I'm so glad we get to watch Great Muppet Caper now.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
It's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous movie.
It's beautiful. And the digital restoration
the
is stunning.
Even if we're wrong, it's the better big screen movie.
Yeah,
Thank you.
The high def definition.
To our guests, Doc Hammer, tell everybody, what do you want people to look at, check out?
I don't care if they investigate anything I've ever done, but why not watch The Venture Brothers if you stay up to that hour and they're playing it? Because nobody knows when it's on.
Why not?
Hulu! It's always on Hulu.
There you go.
There you go.
Go to Hulu.
Stephanie DeBruzzo, what would you like? You have anything to pitch for us?
We start production on season 49 of Sesame Street.
49!
Next week, yeah!
How many seasons have you been at Sesame Street now?
Since season 25.
Since season 25.
Wow!
25 years
on
Sesame
Street. So, we start that and...
That is job security.
Some of you might not know. I'm not good at plugging myself. I did this tiny little stop motion series a couple of years ago called Chimpy and Pansy. Each episode is less than 1 minute long. You can find them at stephaniedebruzzo.com under my own productions. And also, I put a couple of videos up recently. Last season on Sesame Street, my friend Matt Vogel did a Facebook Live show from the Muppet Room when we were in production, and called Below the Frame. I wrote a theme song for it, which is why I like you guys, because you have a theme song. I wrote a theme song for it as soon as he told me the title. Not provoked, by the way. It was totally voluntary. And I did a couple of sort of commercials for things and videos. We couldn't shoot on the set while we were doing the show, so this was a fun way to sort of create a new way of showing you some behind-the-scenes things. So there's a little commercial for the community center and the bike shop sets on Sesame Street, and there's a little game in the style of the old school Sesame Street songs that you might remember. And there's a song, there's a little bit about different points of view, a puppeteer's point of view of Sesame Street. So those videos are also on my website.
Very cool. That's
awesome. Thank you to Craig Shemin, president of the Jim Henson Legacy.
Yay! Amen.
And the Museum of the Moving Image for hosting us and screening and all the wonderful things. Check out the exhibit here. And if you're listening to this and you're in New York City, go to Astoria and check out Museum of the Moving Image.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's an incredible place.
I didn't even know it was here. This is incredible. I'm going to come back.
And if you have a topic that you would like us to solve for you, you can email us at wegotthispodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to facebook.com/groups/wegotthispodcast.
Or you can reach out to us on Twitter @wegotthistweets, or check out the Maximum Fun subreddit. Thanks, as always, to our musicians, Jonathan Dinerstein and Mike Furman, for our score and theme song, respectively.
Thank you to our producer, Ken Plume, right there in the front row. Researcher Kate McManus, QA engineer Jen Alba, and graphic designer Uri Kelman.
And thank you, of course, to you, our listeners at home and or in the car, and you, our audience here in this room at the Museum of the Moving Image. Give yourselves a great big round of applause.
Yes.
You are about to watch a wonderful movie. If you are driving and listening to this podcast, please do not turn on this movie right now. Wait until you get home to watch it. Thank you for listening. We love you all. For Hal Lublin, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
For Mark Gagliardi, I'm Hal Lublin. And don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this.
Thanks, everybody.
Roll it.
Hello, I'm Carrie Poppy.
And I'm Ross Blotcher, hosts of MaximumFun.org's Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
We wanted to tell you the good news that our podcast is now weekly.
Yeah, weekly. On Oh No, Ross and Carrie, we don't make extraordinary claims. We investigate them.
We go undercover with fringe religious groups, investigate paranormal claims, and participate in pseudoscientific medical treatments and report our findings to you.
In a time where alternative facts reign supreme, we cut through the murky spin to give you the real deal on topics like UFOs, the ITZY vaccination movement, Scientology, and even apocalyptic churches.
We're even undercover for some very exciting investigations right now.
Well, not right now, right now.
Yeah, that would be unwise.
That's Oh No, Ross and Carrie at MaximumFun.org.
We show up so you don't have to.
The Dead Pilot Society podcast brings you hilarious comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Aubrey Plaza, Andy Richter, Paul F. Tompkins, John Hodgman, Adam Scott, Molly Shannon, Busy Phillips, Tom Lennon, Anna Camp, Laurie Metcalf, Felicia Day, Michael Ian Black, Adam Savage, Paul Scheer, Ben Schwartz, Skylar Astin, Mae Whitman, Josh Molina, Ben Feldman, Nicole Byer, Jason Ritter, Sarah Chalk, Steve Agee, Jane Levy, Allison Tolman, Danielle Nicolette, Casey Wilson, Anna Ortiz, Lorraine Newman, June Diane Raphael, Kiernan Shipka, Ed Week, Zach Knight, and Carrie Kenny Silver, John Ross Bowie, Jamie Denbo, Janet Varney, Alexander Forsyth, Summer, Ellen Ross, Matt Gordon, and many more. Listen at MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you download podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.